Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. Wow. It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome to the RTE GAA podcast. I'm Mikey Stafford, your host for today. Dez is in Japan supporting the Irish rugby team, but we hope to have a new and exciting presenter lined up soon. But until then, you just have to make do with me. But I am joined by Rory O'Neill, the series producer of The Sunday Game, and by Conan Doherty, editor of Sports Joe. How are you doing, lads?
How's it going?
All good, Mikey.
Looking forward to hearing from you, but I think the man of the week, and the man we all want to hear from most, is the Narasa junior goalkeeper Declan Bonner, who joins us on the line. Declan, of course, is also the Donegal senior manager, but sometimes such things as inter-county management pale into comparison as playing, lining out for your club at the age of 54. How are you feeling today, Declan?
Just recovering after the weekend, but no, it was a matter of trying to get 15 players on the field, so yeah, we got a victory, so we're looking forward to qualifying now this weekend.
Just to clarify, it is a matter of getting 15 on the field, because I'm concerned that you're keeping some promising young 40-year-old goalkeeper out of the team here.
No, definitely not. I think we end up with 16 players togged out at the weekend, and the previous week I think we're down to 15. So the goalkeeper that was actually playing went to New York. He's gone to New York. He flew out last week, so yeah, down to the bare bones, and that's why I had to get the boots back on again, you know.
Okay. Could you describe your goalkeeping style for us? Would you be, are you confrontational? Do you like to attack the ball in the air? Do you kind of let your full back look after things? Or like, because obviously you're an outfielder of some note, so are you the kind of goalkeeper who struggles to stay on his line?
Well, it's debatable now at times. You kind of wander, all right, but no, at 54 years of age, I think you might. My best thing is to stay on the line and try and concentrate and get the kick outs away. But listen, it's a very small club. It's a really small club, and you know, a couple of years ago, maybe 5 years ago, we had two teams in the club, two adult teams. But we're struggling now really to get one team out. And you know, our under-age system, we've amalgamated with our neighbours, Dunlow, and numbers are very, very small, and it's just a matter of trying to keep the club going, and it's not getting any easier, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'll get on to the club there, because I understand you're also obviously the chairman as well, so you're very heavily involved. But just from your own point of view, because some of us in our 30s are probably thinking how much longer we can play on for, I'm wondering, do you do much training, or like as in group training with the team, or do you do a bit of running, or do you go to the gym? Wondering how you kind of keep in shape at 54.
Yeah, no, listen, I tend to get out 3 or 4 mornings a week to get a run in, but you know, you're away an awful lot, especially with senior inter-county management. It's full time, and only in the last number of weeks now since we exited the championship, a number of weeks, you know, just to get back out with the lads again at that club. But and again, it's just a matter of getting numbers in for training. So listen, I had no intention over the last number of years of going back playing, but you know, circumstances I told me otherwise. I had to get back in and as I said, try and fulfil fixtures this season. But no, listen, I try and keep in shape and get a bit of work done, you know.
Yeah. Does that extend to during the inter-county season at training? Would you be involved in drills, running drills, kind of going through them, kind of getting involved if needs be to show that some things done?
I would stay well out of the way of inter-county contact. I don't think it'd last too long in there. But no, listen, it's you know, there's too much happening on any given night that you're at inter-county training to be involved. But it's you know, it's only when you do get time when the season finishes up that you know, you get back in and you help out the club in any way possible. And you know, I've been chairman also for the last 5 or 6 years. So yeah, it's just a matter, as I said before, just a matter of trying to keep the club afloat, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I was actually reading an article on Conan's website, Sports Joe, and they reckon you made your debut as a senior. I'm wondering, do you remember that match? Do you remember who it was against? Do you remember whether you won or lost?
In fact, at that stage, you were allowed to play senior football. I think I made it before I turned 15. So I think I must be into my 40th season now, nearly. So it was, I was just 15 at the time, and it was, the club had been formed the previous year. The club's just in existence, just over the 40-year mark now, and there was a group of lads, just 3 or 4 brothers of mine, that were actually playing around the same, coming through at the same time. So, you know, we had success. You know, we went from Division 4 to Division 1 in the space of 3-4 seasons back in the early 80s, and we played senior football for a number of seasons, and we won two intermediate championships in the, you know, 89 and 99. But over the last, I'd say maybe the last decade, it's been really, really tough trying to keep hold of numbers. And you know, we would have maybe a team or two teams abroad between Australia, between Canada, the UK, America. So it's, I'd say that that's become more difficult, you know.
Declan, Rory O'Neill here. How are you doing? I'd be very curious, as obviously it's a role that I would have a certain amount of experience with, being chairman of a club as well at the same time. And I'm just wondering how much of your time and what, obviously, I've been chair of a club in Dublin for the last 5 years, and I kind of know a fair bit about the role in terms of an awful lot of the problems within a club do tend to present themselves on your doorstep. And then obviously you've got to feed back into county board, and very often the chairperson will be the county board delegate as well. Is that the case in your position? And how much work do you have to put in on that side of things?
I think, Rory, you're taking on far too much now as club chairman there.
Yeah. Well, I'm packing it up this year. Just
Well, I have about 6 seasons done. And one of the reasons we took on a project a number of seasons ago to get a new playing field, and that's in the process of opening up now in 2020. So we've hung in there. It's a very small band of workers we have. As I said before, it's a very, very small club.
How many members would you have in total, Declan?
Well, in total, you're probably talking, in terms of active members, I would say you're talking about maybe 15, 20 people that's actively involved.
Joseph.
Yeah. Now, that can spread a bit now when it comes to tickets for major championship matches.
You come out of the woodwork.
That's exactly. So you get a lot of... But listen, it's very difficult, you know, to get people involved and to get... So I've been there for the last 6 years now as chairman, and, you know, it's... I probably don't give it as the time that I should be giving it, because I'm so heavily involved with the senior inter-county management. And so it hasn't been easy. But, you know, we have a group of maybe, as I said, 10, 15 lads that work really, really hard. Mm. And, you know, as I said, it's all about trying to keep the club afloat and trying. As I say, we're moving into a new playing field next season. And our hope for 2020 is that we can actually field the senior team, you know.
Do you have any hobbies outside the GA? I'm just wondering. You must really fill your days at this point.
Well, no, it's definitely. I did play a bit of golf, back a number of years ago, but that's been put to the one side for the last number of years. But listen, the GA has been part of me for a long, long time. As I've been involved with the club for 40 years now, almost playing and coaching and managing and. Chairman and every other position within that, but listen, it's part of the community and it's part of what we are, and you know, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, might move on to matters. Stay with club matters in Donegal, but move on to the senior championship. Might get you to run your eye over the quarterfinals too, which are on RTE2 on Saturday evening. Milford versus St Unions and Kilcar versus Killybegs. The others are Gweedore, the champions, against Bundoor, and Naomh Connolly against Glenfinn. To my inexpert eye, it looks to me like the four strongest teams have managed to avoid each other there. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say. You know, we're probably at the start of the season, you'd be looking at, you know, St Unions, Naomh Connolly, Kilcar and Gweedore to be in the last four, and you know, that's what it's looking like at the minute. I'm sure the other four teams will have a say in the matter at the weekend, but supposed to two matches on Saturday night. You have Killybegs playing against Kilcar. To me, Kilcar probably, you know, favourites or joint favourites along with Gweedore to win the championship. Kilcar very, very strong. They were missing last season. Patrick McBrady had picked up that injury in the Ulster Finals, where he missed the club season last year. Ryan McHugh was out injured, and so they were beaten last year, but they're very, very strong, and they went through their group stages very, very well. They're playing against the Killybeg side, who'll be missing Owen Van Gallagher, but Rory Gallagher and John Cunningham are looking after Killybeg. They've come through, so that's a local derby, but it's very difficult to see past Kilcar. The other will be a derby match also between St Unions, and you know, St Unions, you know, just about got over the line at the weekend. A draw was enough to get them over the line down in the bridge against St Michael's, and it was a late point from Conal Dunn. that got them through to the quarterfinal. And, you know, they'll be happy enough with that draw, and you'd expect St. Union, but, you know...
Rory Kavanagh pick up a straight red in that game, by all accounts, Declan, I think, did he? And he would he be... I know he's 37, 38 now, but, like, just that experience that I'm sure he brings to their defence could be a big blow if they don't manage to get that red card overturned.
Yeah, exactly. And Rory, you know, he's one of their most influential players. He's keeping himself in good shape. And as I say, he'd be a big loss. Also, they lost Rory Carr, who'd been back playing this season and who was going very well. But nice. He has damaged his shoulder again. So he's going to be missing at the weekend. So Melford, you know, Melford will go on. And, you know, they topped the group, which included Glen Swally. And they'll fancy their chances there. But you'd have to expect that probably Unions will have enough experience and enough craft to get over the line.
Yeah, and then the other two, Gweedore, obviously defending Ulster champions. Are they looking in similar? Are they looking in 2018, Nick, still this year?
Well, you know, they've topped their group. Maybe they're not playing as well as they were 12 months ago, but, you know, they're starting to gather momentum. They put up a decent score against Ardagh at the weekend, and, you know, they have a number of players back from injuries. Owen McNeillis has been playing, and you know, he's starting to find a bit of form now, and he's pivotal to what Gweedore about. Keane Mulligan, Owen McFadden Ferry didn't play the weekend. Kieran Gillespie's just back from injury. So they have a strong, really, really strong squad of players, and, you know, as I said, they done extremely well last year and had a really good run through Ulster and came up short against Cora Finn. But no, I did fancy their chances of definitely progressing now to the last four. And as I say, at this stage and looking at form, it looks to be a race between Kilcar and Gweedore, you know.
Right. You obviously have a different perspective on the Donegal Championship than most. I suppose you're looking at them almost as trials as well as anything else for next year. But from the outside looking in, it looks to be one of the most vibrant senior football club championships around. And I don't know, there might be neighbouring counties, Connors, Derry, and a few more that might look at it and, you know, very vibrant club scenes in those counties, but it sometimes can lead to bad blood and it can lead to rivalries that spill over into county. I've never really seen that in Donegal. It seems to be a very competitive championship, but it doesn't seem to ever, well, in the last 10, 15 years, it doesn't seem to ever present a problem for the inter-county manager in any way.
No, definitely not. And, you know, once the club season's over and we get the players back in, we just go get back working together. And, you know, there's a group of lads there. I mean, I can only speak for myself over the last number of years. And as I said, the lads that are there at the minute, a lot of the younger lads that I would have known well anyway, coming through down the age ranks, and, you know, the more senior players are in there. But no, it's a very united front, and, you know, they come back in. And, you know, it's all for the one cause. At the end of the day, when we wear the Donegal jersey and the, you know, you want the best for Donegal football. And as I say, we'll probably be going back into it now in November because the start of the National League comes in January. And so there's not much time to dwell on anything. So once the club rivalries are gone, you're straight back into county setup and looking forward to the season ahead.
Yeah, just before we let you go, we might ask you just to dwell on 2019 for a moment. You know, how you now assess, in the, you know, after a month or so or 2 months, the your own season, and also how you can compare that to what Dublin have achieved. They've obviously made history and it took them two games, but I don't think anyone can deny the quality on display in that replay was arguably as good as anything they've produced in the 4 years before it. So there's a real challenge set for yourselves and Tyrone and Mayo and Kerry and any other team who kind of see themselves as All-Ireland pretenders.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Dublin have been the best team, you know, probably in terms of GAA football. I mean, and suppose the facts prove itself, they've won five in a row. No other team has done that. And, you know, in terms of Gaelic football, they have, you know, okay, you can talk about the Kerry team back in the 80s, but, you know, to me, this Dublin team, you know, it's just a machine, to be quite honest. And, you know, other counties can talk about lack of funding and this and that and the other, but we've got to get our house in order, no more than the likes of Mayo or Kerry or Tyrone or anyone else that's going after the Dubs. And it's not going to be an easy task. It's a difficult one, but, you know, we've got to go after it in our own way and you know, prepare as best as we can. And it's not easy. But I feel there's a number of teams that can go up there and really go after it. And we'd hope that in Donegal that we're one of those teams, you know.
All right. Well, Declan, thanks very much for taking the call. And best of luck next year with Donegal and for the rest of the season there with your own net minding.
Thanks, lads.
Cheers, Declan. All the best. Yeah.
All right, lads, that put you all to shame, wouldn't it?
Yeah, crazy. It's some commitment, in fairness. It's incredible.
We'll stick with the club scene, I suppose, Conan, because we have with us an actual man playing senior club football in Dublin with Skerry's Harps. That's right, isn't it? What stage is the Dublin Championship at? Where, how's it shaping up?
Final group games now coming up this weekend. We have Ballyboden in Parnell Park on Saturday. I'm not here to talk about Skerry's Harps, though, am I? Sure.
No, you're not. No, I'm just we were just talking about the All Ireland champions and. They've delayed their homecoming and everything else, so I'm guessing they're keen to get a couple of rounds of championship in.
Yeah, no, this is, like, in fairness to Dublin, like, because they do know that they're going to be going until September every year, like, you know, as much as they wouldn't want to tell people that, but they get the two games out of the way in April. Like, a lot of players, I remember playing, after like, 3 days after the Leinster final, when Dean Rock came on and scored 4 points. He came like and played for Ballymun against us and kicked away 7 points that day. You know, Jim Gavin is very good at freeing these boys up and letting them go and play. So I think Dublin always do it well. We get our two games in April, and then come this time of the year, then everybody knows this is club season, and like there's something magical about the last group game as well, when everybody's done the maths and you know what needs to be done. Mm-hmm.
So going by league form and by what we've seen in the championships so far, who's aside from Skerry's Harps, who's looking like favourites?
Vincent's is obviously, they're looking very strong. We played them in the first league game and they were all right back then. They still beat us by 6 points, but I'm sort of going through the gears. But I haven't seen a team as ruthless. Like, I haven't come up face to face with a team as ruthless as Vincent's before. Anytime you lose the ball, it's a goal chance, and usually you put it away as well. It's like they're so calm as well. Like, do you know with every other team, when you know there's an opportunity, it's almost chaos on the sideline. People are roaring, the players are getting too excited. With Vincent's, you can actually just hear them talking to each other, just like, you know, Mossy's on your left, you know, Egan's on your right, and they're just, the communication is so calm, and the players trust each other. Like, they know, like, sort of whatever this person is telling me is the right option, and that's how it works out, and that's how they always get so many goal chances. They're probably the best team that I've come up against, but obviously, you still have all those other strong teams. Kilmacud Crokes just move the ball so well. Can't get a hand on them. Mm-hmm. Didn't really move it so well. So smart.
Vincent's are probably helped to a large extent, funnily enough, which is not, wouldn't really be keeping with the traditions of St. Vincent's. But this year and for the last couple of years, they have had fairly small Dublin involvement. Whereas Ballymun Kickhams, for me, on paper, should be the best team in Dublin. And I think they're Dublin players, some because of the amount of players that they are committing to the intercounty scene, I think that actually hurts them, because what can happen is, see, what people outside of Dublin, this was something that took me an awful long time to get my head around when I first came up here. In Dublin, the league is taken very seriously, to a large extent. It's nearly more important to a lot of clubs than the championship is, because their attitude is, you get 15 league games, you might only get one championship game. Now that's obviously changed. So all through the league, all through the summer months, what you will see with Ballymun is they'll play away without their Dublin players, because that's how the league operates up here. And then when it gets to championship, they have to restitch 6-7 players. Some of the best players in the country, you know, James McCarthy, John Small, Dean Rock, super players, and Philly McMahon. You've got to put Paddy Small, you've got to put them in, Evan Comerford. I mean, like, they have an incredible array of talent. And on top of players that are already there, the likes of Alan Hubbard and Jason Whelan and, you know, Ted Furman, like, they have an exceptional side. But I think what happens is that it takes a while to knit a team together, even with that level of talent. And I think that does tend to harm, I think, Kickham's chances, you know, at this time of the year, because it takes a while to get that sort of chemistry right again, I would imagine.
Yeah, we played them actually in a friendly a couple of weeks ago, and you know, the boys were buzzing. It was a really good game. And training then, the next day, somebody was like, geez, they weren't that good, were they? And then someone was just like, lads, they're missing seven players. Like,
seven,
they were like, half the team. Like,
yeah. Half the team. Yeah.
And we complain we miss one player.
Yeah. It's not a bad problem to have. Dublin, you know, success does breed problems. We all have a lot of sympathy for Dublin, and their homecoming has, you know, we've had a Dublin City Council had to put out a statement yesterday to explain the ticketing situation, and now they're talking about an open bus reception for the team, to like a parade, so that people who haven't got tickets for Merrion Square can still see the two teams and congratulate them and give them their best wishes. Just so there are 15,000 tickets. What they've done is all but 3,500 have been distributed through the clubs. which is an incredibly fair way of doing it. And but Smithfield had a much smaller capacity last year, and it wasn't done. There was no ticketing. It was just turn up, first come, first served. You can get nearest the stage. So this year, it seems they've gone out of their way to try and do everything correctly, but they may inadvertently have kind of caused issues. But the Lord Mayor, Paul McAuliffe, yesterday put out a statement on his Facebook page. And I think we counted that three times he used the phrase genuine fans when describing why they'd done this, of kind of putting it through the clubs, which is, I just think it's interesting when we're talking about Dublin clubs. Dublin are very unusual in lots and lots of ways, but there would be very unusual for a Derry fan or a Cork fan or a Wexford fan to not be a member of a club. But I think in Dublin, it's not at all unusual to be a very committed fan of the Dublin senior inter-county teams and not be a member of a club. Would you think that's a fair statement?
Absolutely. I this year for the All-Ireland football final, I had the very rare and privileged position of actually being wired up to the referee. So for both the draw match and the replay, as well as the hurling final, I could hear what the referee was saying and I could hear what the players were saying back to him. It was illuminating. But what was really interesting was an awful lot of Conor Lane's decisions, which he was getting absolutely spot on, and he was explaining to the players why he was making the decisions and the reaction from the hill. And by and large, the only conclusion you could draw is like a large portion of the guys up, the people up there, don't know the rules. They genuinely don't know the rules. And
is it not just partisanship? Is it just not howling at decisions against your own team?
Well, there may be an element to that, but I definitely think ignorance of the rule book is a problem, not just specific to Dublin either. Like, it'd be churlish to kind of suggest that, but some of us don't even know all of the rules sometimes. When, you know, I remember a really funny story a couple of years ago when I think it was Shane Dowling, a ball came flying across the square in a Munster Championship match. Limerick, I think, were playing Tipperary below in Thurles, and Shane Dowling volleyed the hand pass into the net. It might have been against Waterford, actually. We were all looking at each other as if to say, is that legal? Because I don't think so there's always going to be anomalies. But I think by and large, you know, the long story short is the sense I would get from the hill sometimes is there are people up there who wouldn't be members of clubs, wouldn't really understand the sort of general workings, and then probably consequent to that, might necessarily understand the rule book all that well either. So, like, they have a huge, huge following. Of course, there's going to be a large percentage of that won't be members of clubs. But, you know, there's a lot that are too, I suppose.
What do you think, Conan? The 70s Dublin team, like the following they got, a lot of the following was credited. It was like kind of soccer fans who adopted this successful team, and like kind of terrace culture came into the GAA via the Dublin team of the 70s. Do you need to be a GAA club member to be a fan of a county team? Or if you love your county, you love your county.
Yeah, like I think most counties would be crying out for people who aren't members to get out and give them some like ticket revenue, get the games. You do see it sort of like, you would see the odd person in Derry, like, you know, coming to games and be like, well, he's not part of a club. And it is strange, it sticks out. But I think just because the population's so big in Dublin, then there's obviously a lot more. It is frightening, though, what's happening in Dublin. Like, we talk all we want about money and whatever else, but the amount of jerseys I see, just like club jerseys around even the city centre, but on the outskirts and all these clubs, any sort of club stronghold area, there are hundreds of kids just running around in jerseys. Like, I live in Skerries, and I genuinely don't know like any of these. Like, I'm seeing hundreds and hundreds of blue jerseys running around, and I don't know any of them. And it's like, it's everybody is so engaged now with GAA, because obviously success breeds success, and it's cool to play with Dublin now. And I think, yeah, to answer your question, it's also cool to follow them whether or not you're involved.
Or whether or not you live in Dublin. Obviously, a few businesses in Ashburn were getting a bit of heat, and a few other Meath towns were getting a little bit of feedback from Meath fans saying, why have you got signs in your windows congratulating the Dublin team?
I think the Meath fullback, was it a Meath fullback? I don't know, had a post on Facebook. He was a little upset by it. But, you know, look, I suppose there are going to be people, like, I think that'll all, like, that's just a generational thing. Once their kids grow, you know, it's the parents go out there initially. Of course, I'm living in Dublin 15 years, but I would wouldn't consider myself a dub. You
haven't
know
got
what
a
mean?
Blue jersey, no?
No, I don't. No, absolutely not. But like that kind of just washes itself out, I think, over time.
Ah, yeah. Well, actually, since we mentioned Meath, we'll stick with them. This is a very odd story, the Peter O'Halloran story, the county chairman who's resigned. If you don't know the story, he stepped down citing an error of judgment last Friday night after a years-old WhatsApp message to referee Patrick Nealis emerged, in which, and he doesn't dispute this, he sent a message to Nealis and asking him to ride Slane in a month or so. I think it was a junior match. So obviously he wanted Slane to get a hard time of it. There's a few questions here. Obviously what he did is not acceptable, but you'd wonder why it's coming out now. And if every GAA official's old WhatsApp and text messages were to be gone through, it'd be a bit like presenting the Oscars. No one would be allowed to do it because their history would be so ropey.
And there's no context either. I mean, you don't know what was he responding to or what was the subsequent conversation that took place in that WhatsApp interchange, you know? Was it meant in jest? Was it just a sort of an offhand sort of a, you know, I suppose, a sarcastic comment? Or, you know, like, I think it's very, very difficult to draw any conclusions on this, and I don't think from my experience, there's no GAA official goes into any job, you know, considering that they're all by and large voluntary, to go, you know, to go purposefully, you know, do things like this. I don't know. I think it's just really, really odd that it would surface 2 years afterwards and cost a man a voluntary job. It would leave me feeling a little uneasy.
Yeah, it's an odd one.
But would you maybe question, he's a club man as well? Like, you know, all these people who are in these positions come through the club and they are club men at the very core, so that might be their first interest.
Well, I think what you need to do is you need to establish all of the facts. I like, it could very well be the case where he might have sent that comment in a sort of half-jokingly manner, and now as a result of whatever has surfaced in the meantime, he's decided, you know what, I'm doing this in a voluntary role. And I'm getting this kind of abuse for it because people are raking up stuff that I might have posted 2 years ago. Good luck to you, lads.
And I absolutely agree. And we don't know sort of what happened here. But my only issue with it, or especially sort of the voluntary argument, is that I don't know if Slane got rode or not by the referee. But say the players would have been committing for a
whole
year.
The assertion is that it wasn't carried, followed Grant, through on. Yeah.
But I sort of see it all the time, you know, when people talk about, you know, don't criticise the GAA player because he's an amateur. It's like, well, or don't criticise the referee because he's doing the job for free. It's like, well, a lot of players are committing their lives to it as well. Like, so they deserve the very best of it.
Oh, I have no issue with that. I just don't. I think the issue here is very little detail. There's no context. To me, it's unfortunate that the man has had to resign, because I think what has actually happened is he's probably poured a little bit of fuel on the fire to a certain extent by the resignation. But I don't know, I just think it's all a bit murky, you know, that something like this is surfacing. You know, I mean, there but for the grace of God go any of us.
Said you don't want your old WhatsApps dredged through, certainly not.
Definitely not.
That's true.
Meath County Board have asked for a higher GAA authority to investigate it anyway, so I don't think we've heard the end of what we all agree is a slightly odd story. We will move on. As I said, we're kind of bouncing around the places. That wonderful time of the year when you've got no big story, but lots of little stories. Rory, are we preparing ourselves in Cork for the third coming of JBM?
By all accounts, yeah. I mean, so we're hearing that Jimmy is very interested in taking on the minor job. I mean, look, you would have a small bit of a concern from his point of view, because, look, there's no point in me denying it. Jimmy Barry Murphy was and is my hero. Like, you know, like the man has a legendary status that's just unimpeachable in we'll say in Cork folklore. And I think to a certain generation, like, you know, when Jimmy walks into a room, everybody almost genuflex. That's the kind of level of sort of deity that he enjoys. And the only issue that I would have from his point of view is that, like, minor are now 16-year-olds. Jimmy's in his late 60s. So
He won't be a hero to these kids.
Well, like bar, you know, what they hear from their parents and maybe certain stuff that they might see or read, you know, in Laoghaire Gaels and, you know, All-Ireland goals and things like that, like, there wouldn't be the same resonance probably for, we'll say, the millennials that you're dealing with. Like, that the kind of impact that he would have had when he walked into the Cork dressing room in 1987, 98, when he first took over the senior team back then. That's probably not, like, because, I mean, straight away, I would imagine, to a man, 1 to 15, we're doing this for Jimmy. And lo and behold, with the youngest team Cork ever, went up to Croke Park in 99 and managed to win, a tough All-Ireland 13-12 in the lashings of rain. So it's odd that he'd want to go back at this stage, you know, considering he's already been minor manager back in the 90s, won an All-Ireland, actually 95. But look, who are any of us to tell Jimmy Barry Murphy what he should or shouldn't do, you know? I mean, like, if he feels he has something to contribute in any way, shape or form, I think the important thing for him will be, you know, maybe put one or two, you know, good people around him again, which I'm sure he will. And, like, I mean, he's an inspirational figure. There's no doubt about it. And I think, look, if there's anything that you can say about the current administration in Cork, like their appointments processes that they've employed and the kind of people that they've put in charge, Keith Ricken being the perfect case in point, like an absolutely inspirational appointment, not made until the first week of February. And what, 4 or 5 months later, they managed to win an All-Ireland by beating Kerry, Tyrone and Dublin, you know? So like with very little prep time. So look, you'd have to trust the current administration. Kevin Donovan's a super guy and I think he is definitely going to make a huge difference. I think Cork are a coming force, both hurling and football again. And you'd have to back it and hope, and just hope from Jimmy's point of view that it works out.
Conan, I'm just curious because this might be the last of these kind of, I wouldn't call it ad hoc, but kind of, it looks like Kieran Kingston's going to take the senior job. Someone called Ryan. Ryan's going to take the under-20 job and Jimmy Barry Murphy. But earlier in the summer, Cork appointed a new kind of high-performance director, where you kind of think, I wonder, is this the last time that Cork are going to have appoint kind of three people individually, whereas in the future maybe they'll be looking at pathways, kind of like Dublin have done it a little bit, you know, they've kind of, Jim Gavin has, you know, he earned his wings at under 20 and then came up. I wonder, are Cork going to go that way? And do you think that's a sensible way, almost like a style of football? The FAI are supposedly trying to do it, like this kind of building a style throughout your age groups.
I think it's definitely sensible. And yeah, it definitely helps to have the whole county sort of going in the one direction. But I just don't believe in, well, I believe in it, but I don't think people buy into long-term strategies anymore. Like, you know, in Derry, we've got a director of football and Brian McIver, county legend, you know, Ulster legend, in fairness, as a coach, and you couldn't pick a better man to be there. But, like, Derry just sort of bounced around between managers as well. And, like, as much as the success has come from provincial underage glory, you know, it doesn't seem like we're really sort of set on what we're doing in the long term. Not to hijack a Cork discussion and make it about Derry, but...
Well, no, it's a broader discussion, yeah.
But, and, like, people are impatient. Like, you know, so, you know, you might have this appointment put in place, you might have this long-term strategy, but people still want success after a year or two, even if it's relative, they still want it. And then I think we all go into this reactionary phase in where we get a new manager and to try and get that, whatever means necessary, whatever's going on in the bigger picture. It's a good idea, but I just don't know how well it works out in theory.
I'm a big fan of the Wexford approach of just getting the Galactico manager that gets bums on seats. But in general, Kieran Kingston, Rory, would be seen as, like, nobody wanted him to leave. It was his choice the first time.
Yeah, like, the first year didn't go so well for Kieran. Obviously, we lost to Wexford Cork lost to Wexford in the championship for the first time since 56, was it? You know, so, like, that would have been a sort of a stain to a certain extent. I think the second year, they were considered absolute no-hopers. I was here at a preview that we did above here in Radio Building, and there was an hour's discussion on hurling, and Cork weren't mentioned once and ended up winning the Munster Championship that year, kind of, you know, against the head, obviously in the old format, you know, where you had to win three games, you know, and I think it was... So went into an All-Ireland semi-final and were very unlucky. I do believe, because I was at the game myself that day, I do believe Damien Cahillan sending off doesn't happen. I think Cork had kind of figured Waterford out by then. You know, like, obviously the scoreline reflected poorly at the end, but I think the couple of goals Waterford ran in. And then you're into an All-Ireland final against Galway, where Cork's record is, you know, 100%. So simple little thing could have changed the course of history for Cairn very quickly. And I do get the sense from him that there's an element of unfinished business there, you know?
Yeah, you would imagine so, because as you said, they came so close. There's one other appointment, which is a slightly lower key one, that kind of interests me, is a man by the name of Davy Burke. It looks like he's going to take over the Wicklow senior footballers. Mm. He was the Kildare under 20. He was the Kildare under 20 manager there last year. Obviously successful there. What interests me about him is he's 31 years of age. This happened before. It happened in my own county. David Power, after great success with the Tip Miners, took over to Wexford Seniors. He was there from 2014 to 2016. The reason he left was work commitments, etc., etc. But you always got the sense, I may be completely wrong, it's just a personal opinion, I'm not sure a quite kind of a grizzled old Wexford team who had success but were definitely on the wane. I don't know if they ever bought into a man their age, a lot of them, being their manager. And Wicklow are, maybe at a slightly lower ebb than even Wexford were in 2014. Maybe it's a young team. Maybe they're just looking for fresh ideas. But I always think it's a gamble to get in a man of the age of 31 to manage a senior inter-county team.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, I remember asking Johnny Doyle, like, what was the magic of Kieran McGeaney? Because as much as he gets sort of lambasted by, like, you know, anybody in the media, sometimes they think he's got this sort of persona where people don't like him, but players do genuinely seem to always warm to him. And I was asking him, what was it? And he said, it was very simple. When they first met, he got all the players, he gave them all the excuses for why they weren't winning. They were genuine ones and, like, you know, petty ones as well. I wrote them all down on a board, and he said he just tried to address every single one of them. And, like, you know, the first one was, we don't have a gym. So he had to train with the plebs, the locals, like, you know, when they were waiting on, like, you know, racks and stuff like that, and not maybe lifting as heavy as they wanted to because there was no weights available. And he said McGeaney organised his fight night, big fundraiser, they got their own gym, you know, out in the K Club. And he said that was the moment where players were like, this guy actually does care. He's listening to what we're saying and he's making it happen. You know, and I think so, no matter what age you are, if you can come in and do that, like, actually try to figure out and genuinely listen and say, like, what's the problem here? And try to sort of solve that. I don't think people would care what age you are.
Rory, what do you think?
From my understanding, the only experience that he has is, the main experience is obviously in Kildare in the 20s. Now, they had a successful year. The year before last, they won it, didn't they? They actually won the All-Ireland. They beat Mayo in the final. And so I think, look, I wouldn't necessarily, the age thing, I wouldn't worry about all that much at all. I think if the fella has the right coaching credentials and he's got the right attitude and the right mentality, what age he is inconsequential from what I can see. And my understanding of dealing with teams and putting managers in place and different things at club level anyway, certainly it doesn't really matter. I suppose the big thing from an intercounty perspective, from Wicklow have a very strong club scene. Like, and I've always found that they to me would be, you know, especially considering the way the population is starting to sort of drift kind of eastwards. Wicklow are certainly a county that I would think could spring up from Division 4 very, very quickly. And look, if you were looking to build your coaching credentials and you were looking to try and, I suppose, get your name on, we'll say, out there, I think that's a job that you could make a significant improvement in a short period of time to certainly add to your CV and the pedigree that you have as a coach. And I say fair play to him and good luck to him.
Yeah, well, just to let Davey know that I'm actually moving to Wicklow in the next couple of months.
So you're available.
If he's a goalkeeper, slightly younger than Declan Bonner, I'm here for him. Okay, we'll finish up soon, lads, but we can't finish up without talking about championship structures. It's that time of the year. And I just thought it was kind of funny. We had two rather prominent voices on it in the last couple of days. Mick O'Dowd, former Meath manager, was on Sunday Sport. And he said he was in favour of it. He said, you know, we have junior, intermediate, senior that works throughout the country in 32 counties. For me, it's very surprising that it doesn't appear in the inter-county championship as well. Mick O'Dowd, the former manager of a current Division 1 team, I'm correct in saying, yeah. And then you have Stephen Poacher, coach of Carlo, a current Division 3 or Division 4 now, Carlo?
Division 4. They got relegated
back to 4.
They're back in 4.
Yeah.
unsurprisingly, coach of a Division 4 team, Stephen Poacher, is vehemently opposed to the tier structure. So I think this is a divide that we're going to see. And
there's a theme developing here.
If the GAA insist on speeding through, you know, the Tommy Murphy Cup Mark II, there's going to be a very clear divide between, I think, Division 4 and Division 3 teams who may be in favour of a tiered championship, but I think they want to see a little bit more thought put into it. And then Division 1, 2 teams who are just going to say, oh yeah, sounds great, go on ahead with it, lads, fill your boots. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. Then you have the GPA coming out talking about competitive balance, which is something they want to see brought in, and they like the idea of it, and it comes from the AFL. Now, the problem with the AFL is you have transfers and a draft, so competitive balance.
And it's professional.
And it's professional. So it's kind of easy to implement, or easier to implement competitive balance with our county structure. That's obviously a far bigger challenge. Listen, this has been, you know, pushed through at the speed of light, where there's a fixtures task force like looking at the very issue, which they're planning on making a major move on before they finish up with it. Conan, I know this is something you've written about a lot in the last couple of years. Just give us your take on it. Do you think it's kind of unseemly speed being gone at the moment?
Oh, gee, like way more than unseemly speed. Like, I was just looking at it, and again, I always look at it from a Derry point of view. And again, I know we're a Division 3 and 4 team, but if this proposed Tommy Murphy Mark II, as you say, comes in next year, which looks like it will, if the same, say, calendar or same fixtures applied from this season to next season, Derry would have beaten, potentially, say, would have beaten Tyrone and Antrim and would have played Donegal in a semi-final. But say they lost to Donegal, then they're in the Tommy Murphy Cup, even though they'd beaten Tyrone and Antrim. You know, Cork would have beaten Limerick and then they're in a provincial final, and that would automatically keep them in the A Championship. The problem has always been provincial structures, and the fact that we're clinging on to it, it is absurd. Like, I'm so astonished that this is not the thing that we're always trying to address. The number of games is a complete imbalance. The luck of geography is just not fair. And like the fact that 70% of the championship is still revolved around the provincial championship is nuts. Like, you know, if you just took that out of the equation, everything would be fine. Division 1 and 2 teams wouldn't be saying, yeah, let's split it. And neutrals wouldn't be saying, split the championship because this is awful. Dublin wouldn't have to play 2 or 3 games against Division 3 or 4 teams. They would beat them and move on. Like in a proper championship, all those teams get put out anyway. And then as you progress, it gets more and more competitive. Like every other competition in the world. But the problem is the provincial structure. And because we're clinging to that, because there's 6 teams in one, there's 12 teams in another, 9, 5, it's hard to sort of like free yourselves of that rigidity. And now you have this Tommy Murphy Cup, which is going to... It's going to really screw you over. Like, imagine Derry had beaten Tyrone and Antrim and they're still in the Tommy Murphy Cup.
Yeah.
Because they only got to an Ulster semi-final. Whereas if they were lucky enough to be a county somewhere else, they would have had to win one game potentially against a Division 4 team.
Yeah.
And you're in the championship.
It is a structure, Rory, that was designed when people cycled to matches. It's basically, that's why they did it. It was for geographical reasons. Yeah. We were discussing it last week with Paul Rouse. And you, as one of the brain trust who has to decide on the matches, RTE show live in the early stages of the championship, I'm sure you wouldn't be too sorry to see the back of the provincial championship.
Well, from a TV perspective, maybe not. But like, I suppose as a supporter and as a member, I'd be a little bit more circumspect. I mean, like, some of the best memories I have of going to matches are Cork and Kerry, and it's a fixture that I grew up on, you know. And it it didn't really matter. Well, it did matter whether you won or lost, but it was like Cork and Kerry before the introduction of the back door was the All Ireland final in Munster, you know. Like, what happened after that was, you know, like beating Kerry for Cork people and vice versa. It was just such, I mean, 50,000 in Killarney, 50,000 in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, you know. And like, to a large extent, the back door is actually neutered and watered down that sense, you know, because I guarantee you, if Cork and Kerry went back to, and I'm just looking at it because I know Munster is one of the provincial championships that gets beaten over the head quite regularly. Obviously, Leinster is a big problem. But I do think Cork are going to come back over the next couple of years in football, and there will be a reasonably competitive Munster Championship, albeit with just 2 teams. But Connacht is, you know, like Roscommon won it this year, and Ulster will always be competitive. Now, we can argue about quality versus competition. There's a big difference there. I think Ulster has, you know, so, but Leinster is the problem. Now, if you park and you're getting rid of the provincial championships, that's fine. I think you have
You don't have to get rid of it. You could just play it off as a pre-season competition, could you not?
You possibly could. Like, but there are four competitions that you're just binning, and there's 130 years of history that you're pouring down the drain. We'll say, you know, now again, as you rightly point out, maybe you move it to another.
It becomes the league.
They become the O'Byrne Cup, the McKenna Cup, the McGrath Cups. Effectively, then that's what if you divorce them from the championship. The biggest issue for me around what's going on with the football championship is what you now have currently is you have too many competitions within the one competition. You have four provincial championships, you have a backdoor, you have a Super 8s, and then you have the All-Ireland Series. So what's that, seven? Is it? Is there seven different competitions before you finally crown
There's
a champion?
There's not many competitions that have a knockout and before
now,
the group
and,
stage.
And now you're looking to put another layer in there. Because the backdoor will still remain, even though it's only going to be two qualifying rounds. So you're now going to add another layer of complication in there with sort of a shield competition.
And
so
add
the
league to that as well.
Yeah. So I mean, I think if you can't keep adding pieces to think that that's going to fix it, and it just becomes kind of an amorphous mass of. Well, what is this? You know, where are we actually going?
You have club players screaming about more inter-county matches being added to the calendar.
I think, to be fair to the current GAA president, I think people are saying, oh, this is going to be his legacy, and I think his biggest legacy, and I think if he was looking for a legacy, I think will be hopefully this fixtures committee come back with something that can appease all vested interests. And if that's something that gets implemented, then I think an awful lot of people will say fair play to John Horan. So I think in terms of what's happening in October, it does seem that it's, you know, there's a certain amount of haste with this that could be very hasty. You know, I think that'll ultimately be its downfall. Because when something is moved that quickly, I've heard Pat Nolan speak, and he feels that because Central Council are sponsoring this motion, that they have a huge weight at Congress and that they will have a tendency to get this over the line. But, like, I don't know, I presume it's a 60%, is it? Yeah, I presume it's 60%. Like, that would be a difficult enough figure, I would imagine, to get to if most of the Division 3 and Division 4 counties would have a reticence about it. And you'd imagine most of the overseas as well. So I think the hastiness at which it's being kind of sort of, you know, brought in, I think ultimately could be its downfall.
Yeah. Look, there are merits to his plan. It's not some kind of solo run for the sake of it, but it sounds like those most affected by it are the players, administrators, managers, and, you know, clubs of the Division 3 and 4 counties. And what should they do, Con? Because, you know, it's all very well and good Stephen Poacher being quoted in the paper, but he's one voice, and going through the media mightn't be the best way. Like, we say this a lot, but the GAA is a democracy, is a time for people to make their voices heard in the right channels.
Yeah, I genuinely think that this just shouldn't be allowing this conversation to take place without a chat about the provincial structure first. And, like, sorry, Rui, when I talk about, like, province, I'm not even talking about, like, competitiveness. I mean, I can't believe that we have a tournament where one county potentially has to win four games to get to a quarterfinal and another county has to win two. Like, where else would that happen? Like, you know, that's 100% more games than another county. Do you know? So I think, like, everybody in the GAA, every county should be holding them to account with that. Like, and I don't know if you want to keep the provincial structure or if you want to level them out. So, like, Derry could be playing in Leinster one year. You know, there's some sort of merit to that, but they have to be an equal number of games if we're all going towards the same stage, the quarterfinal phase. You know, so I think to answer your question, Mikey, like, that's probably the first thing is to hold the GAA to account. Like, tell them, like, we want to talk about the actual problem, the thing that's causing so much, like, because as well, one team are playing four games, then we're going to a qualifier. The championship is starting in May and ending in late July, that part of the championship. Then we bring in the Super 8s in as well, whereas if you were able to speed that up, that should really be two games, three games, and you're into a quarter final. But it's taken 2 months. It should be, let's talk about that first. We're not going to let you distract us with a new bells and whistle thing.
Yeah, what would your thoughts be, Roy, on the next, not what should be the champion structure be, but what should the next step be? Should there be brakes put on this in October?
Well, it is going to go to the floor in
October.
It's
going to be voted on.
It will be voted on. Now, I think it'll be tight enough for this to get over the line. You see, I kind of made this comparison before. You know, like it's a bit like Brexit. Like if you look at the breakdown of the vote on Brexit, I think something like 75% of people over the age of 65 voted to leave the European Union, largely people who aren't going to be affected by Britain leaving the European Union. So a huge chunk of the people that are going to be voting to split this into tiers aren't going to be affected. Like, it's not going to affect Mayo, it's not going to affect Tyrone, it's not going to affect Dublin, Galway, probably Kerry, you know. So they'll probably say, ah, yeah, so it means that we're not having to go out and play Louth in the first round of the championship and win by 25 points. Sure, that suits us fine because, you know, I take the heat off people talking about the finances that we're getting, etc. So, you know, I think that to me is a big part of the problem, that if this is foisted upon, we'll say, 8 to 16 counties that don't want it, I think that's a very dangerous road for the GA to go down. I think if you look at all of the, we'll say, landmark sort of shifts, whether that be Rule 21, Rule 42, the opening of Croke Park, all of those, there was a groundswell of sort of grassroots opinion that kind of weighed in behind it. So the GA, from an administrative level, were sitting on fairly solid ground in terms of knowing that the decision that they were making was in tune and in chimed with the membership. Not so sure if this one is. And it's a big shift, you know, to basically cut the umbilical cord off for 16 counties for their ability to contest in Sam Maguire. That's a fairly radical shift.
And 10 of them at least will probably never make it back to that stage. They just won't.
It's pulling up the lifeboats, all right. Okay, well, that was Brexit mentioned on the GA podcast.
Forced a load of people to turn off there now straight away.
There is no RTE broadcast safe from Brexit, so we'll probably leave it at that. I'd like to say thank you to Rory, thank you to Conan. I'm Mikey Stafford. This was the RTGA podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening to it, you're probably listening to it on one of those platforms, but we still persist with saying this. Anyway, we will be back again next week. Thanks very much. Goodbye.